Ms. Wagner, if you can give us a moment for everybody to get in and out of the courtroom, we'd appreciate that. And Ms. Wagner, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I am and was the attorney for Jennifer Westwood. She filed for divorce from Cheryl Darnell in the year 2016, late in 2016. Parties had been married in Vermont in 2011, but came back to Nebraska and lived there throughout the course of their marriage. As part of the marriage, both the women worked for the Nebraska Department of Corrections and different jobs earned about the same. They made a decision, discussed it, and agreed that Ms. Westwood would retire or quit her job, cash in a bulk of her pension funds, and they would use that money to pay off their bills, both separate and joint, and then they would start traveling as soon as those bills had been decided and paid for. Ms. Darnell at the time had an almost brand new car that where she still owed $21,000, and Ms. Westwood had a car too. And the money cashed in by Ms. Westwood out of her pension was $74,000, except $22,000 of that was withheld for taxes. She ended up with about $52,000, put it in the joint account, and paid Ms. Darnell's bills that were substantial, including the $21,000 on the vehicle. 2 months after...
Are retirement funds generally considered marital property, or what is the precedent in that area?
Well, the precedent is generally that funds that you had already acquired or accrued in your pension would not be considered marital property unless they were commingled. This is a case that demands equity, and that's the crux of our argument. She paid off Ms.
Whose burden is it to show that this would not be marital property?
I believe it would have been the appellant's burden to do that, and we believe that we did. She paid off these debts of Ms. Darnell and some of her own out of the $52,000, and 2 months later, Ms. Darnell left the marriage and habitated elsewhere. In the district court...
Was the debt on Ms. Darnell's car a joint debt, or was it...
It was Ms. Darnell's debt.
So when Ms. Westwood paid, presumably voluntarily, on Ms. Darnell's debt, was that a gift?
It was not a gift, Your Honor. The case law indicates that under circumstances such as these, it cannot be considered a gift.
What's your authority for that? Are you referring on the Schumann case?
Yes.
Right. That was a little different situation, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, the fact of the gift. all of the case law and statutes in Nebraska cite to the principle that property division in a dissolution must be equitable. And several times during the trial, the judge asked questions about, I can do this equitably, I need to do this equitably, and also raised the issue of unjust enrichment by Ms. Darnell.
If, rather than going through a dissolution, Ms. Darnell had died and by will had left her estate to someone else, wouldn't your client be in exactly the same position with respect to that debt?
Perhaps, perhaps not. Ms. Darnell had children from other relationships, and if there was a will and she left them to it, Ms. Westwood could, of course, request the spouse contribution or the division where she would keep 50%. However, none of those things happened. Ms. Darnell got all of her debts paid and took off. And therefore, the judge even asked how that could be justified, seeking Ms. Westwood's request for having that debt on the car be reimbursed to her. The other issue was that when Ms. Westwood withdrew that money, then she was subject to taxes, and she conferred with Ms. Darnell about doing a joint tax return, married filing jointly, and Ms. Darnell refused and said she would wait until the judge made the decision, and then she didn't wait.
Can a judge force people to file a joint tax return?
No. Under Bach, they cannot. However, that what happened in this case can be used as evidence that the distribution of property should be looked at to make the situation equitable. Ms. Darnell testified that she got over $3,000 refund, and part of that was based on she did head of household because she still had a child in her care. But Ms. Westwood had to pay when she took the pension funds and a penalty then, and then she had to pay in for taxes $5,700 plus. So Ms. Westwood is seeking equity on that, and having the two refund and the paying in be equalized. So
I beg your pardon, is this during the same tax year?
Pardon me?
Is this during the same tax year?
Yes. Okay. It was all happened that year. So we believe that the equities of the situation and the prevention of Ms. Darnell being unjustly enriched require the court to remand this case for further proceedings in the district court to correct the lack of equity and the unjust enrichment that Ms. Darnell received. I'll reserve the rest if I have any.
Thank you very much, Ms. Steen. Good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Gail Steen and I represent Cheryl Darnell in this action. It's one thing to say that you believe there's inequity, there's a different thing to prove it. The court found that Ms. Westwood had the burden of proving there was inequity in this divorce and she failed to prove that. The key issue was about the retirement and when did that become marital. The The problem is that Ms. Westwood did have some of that retirement was premarital. We don't know what that amount is, and that's the big problem.
No evidence was offered to separate premarital from marital portions of the pension?
Correct. The information was sought in discovery and not provided. There was also an ongoing issue about sanctions for failing to provide discovery. Ms. Westwood never showed what part of that retirement account was premarital. In the brief, the argument was, well, you should assume it's similar to what Ms. Darnell had, but the court doesn't assume. The court needs to be proven to the court. So that element was not proven, and that's what caused the major concern in this case. Regardless, when Ms. Westwood cashed out her retirement account, she didn't pay off Ms. Darnell's debt. She paid off marital debt. Ms. Westwood keeps characterizing the debt as Ms. Darnell's debt, Ms. Darnell's debt, Ms. Darnell's debt. But the debt was incurred during the marriage for the benefit of the marriage. The testimony was that, exactly, there was a plan for Ms. Westwood to retire. They were going to buy a comfortable car and tour around the world. They bought one car, and they decided that car was not comfortable, so they traded that car in and got the Avenger. So the debt that was associated with the Avenger included the loans that were still owed for the Mercedes that was purchased before. So the debt wasn't strictly for the Avenger. And the debt, regardless of how it's titled, was a marital debt. Division of the property when we got...
What is your source for regardless of how it is titled?
Just ongoing case law, Your Honor, that says that debt occurred during the marriage for the benefit of the marriage, regardless of how titled, is considered marital debt. You start with Gingrich and go on about classifying how debt is divided or how you determine what is marital property and what is marital asset. So that's the biggest part in our case, is that's the problem. On the cars, the end division is that the parties ended up walking out evenly divided. Ms. Westwood had a retirement account. Ms. Darnell had a retirement account. They both walked out with cars that were about the same value. They both had the items out of the home that they wanted. There was a marital home. It was sold. Both walked out not owing any debt to anyone. So the equity at the time of the divorce is exactly even. Ms. Westwood wants to go back and do an accounting through the whole marriage, and that's simply not something that the court is fit to do.
There is a difference, though, in the taxes, aren't there?
There is a difference in the
taxes. One person gets $3,500 refund and one owes $5,500.
There was a difference in the taxes, and the problem, again, is a burden of proof. The case law suggests that if you are going to argue that there should be an equity made because of the taxes, you have to show what that difference is. And Ms. Westwood didn't. She simply said...
Do we know what they were at the time of the divorce? It was not speculative at that point, is that correct?
The taxes were filed and the taxes were offered. However, Ms. Westwood never offered a copy of what taxes would have looked like if they filed jointly. And that's the problem, is that she didn't have that burden.
It's a lack of evidence.
Exactly. She wants the court to just say, well, it should be about this, but that's not, again, that's an assumption on the court's part. That's not a proof. She should have filed or provided a dummy divorce or a dummy tax return that showed what that amount was, but she wanted to argue that that's what the
court did. You're saying had she given some proof of what a joint return would have yielded?
Then the court would have had something to base a decision on, correct? Because at this point, we don't know what that number would be. We don't know if they would have still had a return. We don't know if they would have paid in. We don't know what that number would be. That's further complicated by the fact that Ms. Darnell does have another child, and so she was able to claim head of household. So Ms. Westwood, on one hand, wants to say, well, I've been unjustly enriched, or that Ms. Westwood, or excuse me, let me try that all again. Ms. Darnell has been unjustly enriched. However, she would have been unjustly enriched by being able to claim a child that is not her child.
Can you remind me what was the status at the time of the divorce of Darnell's retirement account?
Ms. Darnell had... I can't tell you the exact number. I know it's in the exhibit. Mm-hmm. I believe the number, Ms. Darnell's marital contribution was about $41,000. She had a premarital account, and part of it was marital. They both had premarital accounts. They both had some that was accrued during the marriage. Ms. Darnell's marital account was about $41,000. The marital portion was about $41,000.
Counsel, I'd like to take a little bit of issue with your argument about the taxation and the absence of a dummy return, my premise being that the application of tax law is simply a matter of law, not a matter of fact, and mathematics may be involved. What would be the missing facts as opposed to issues of law? In other words, for the most part, if all the facts are there from the returns that were actually filed, I'm dubious that your proposition is correct about the absence of a dummy tax return. But if there are missing facts, I would be inclined to agree with you, and I want to hear your response to that.
My argument would be that when you file a tax return, if your taxable rate changes based on what the income is.
But that's a matter of law, correct? It's dictated by federal statute.
Correct. That is a matter of law. I think that could be done, but what Ms. Westwood was asking you to do is just simply look at these two tax returns, divide the difference, and say that's what it is. And that may not have been what the difference is. That's my premise.
But I think Justice Castle is saying, regardless of the argument, what evidence is there that would permit the court or this court or a person knowledgeable about the tax law from working up the dummy joint return?
And they could have done that. That's not what was requested of the court to do. And again, it goes to the burden. And I think the case law suggests that that's the correct procedure, is that if you're arguing that the taxes are were inequitably divided, it's your burden to show that it is. It's that Bach versus Dobby case is the one that talks about that's the correct procedure in which to do that, is that you present your tax return and you also present the other tax return to show what the actual impact would have been to the equity. So yes, I think the court could have done another tax return. I think that's a little onerous on a district court judge to say, and do another tax return so you can determine if this amount is equitable. What she was presented with was that the two were separated, that they both filed their tax returns, and that's what they went forth on. The judge found that the division was an equitable division, and I think that goes to abuse of discretion. I don't think the judge abused her discretion in making that determination that it was an equitable division. I don't think the facts were there for the judge to rely on to make a different decision. My biggest concern about Ms. Westwood's argument is about unjust enrichment. I'm concerned about implying unjust enrichment to a divorce case. How do you weigh what the benefit is of a marriage? How do you weigh what the benefit is?
Where does the unjust enrichment concept come from?
From Ms. Westwood?
What's the legal?
Under the equity argument. I'm not sure if I followed you there. It is under the equity argument, but my concern is applying it to...
Is that normally a contract?
It's generally it is contract-based, and it is equity-based, but I would argue that it doesn't apply in a divorce action. I think it's a slippery slope to start saying...
Have we ever applied it in a divorce action?
I did not find any case law that suggested that that was an appropriate remedy. Your Honor, we would ask the court to affirm the lower court. There was other complications in this case due to the lack of discovery that was not provided and requested. Based on what the evidence the judge had, the judge did an equitable division of the debts and assets. The parties walked away evenly, and we would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 14 seconds, Ms. Wagner.
What Ms. Steen has indicated, particularly about the unjust enrichment portion, is clearly not borne out by the evidence. Ms. Darnell came into the marriage, and Ms. Steen is being a little bit off on her figure. She said Ms. Darnell's marital property totaled about $41,000. That would include half of Ms. Westwood's pension. To supplement it, Ms. Darnell even admitted that she could have not paid off her car with using her funds, that she had to have the money from Ms. Westwood. Ms. Westwood paid off the car, ended up taking a hit on taxes, and Ms. Darnell got out with no debt and a complete car, and which she would have never had they not cashed in, had Ms. Westwood not cashed in that money.
Ms. Wagner, before your time has expired, which it has, I still want to ask you. Your argument really relies simply on equity. It doesn't, this whole concept of unjust enrichment, you're not really contending that the law of unjust enrichment applies in a dissolution. It's used more as a colloquial phrase rather than in its legal specificity. Is that,
that
am I correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right.
And that is basically an equitable argument.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the